Fine. The series of shiurim that we're about to embark on relate to the one of the most significant topics in our daily lives,
so Rebbe, if you just unmute, apologies.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. I guess you needed a third time. Before you begin, you know, they say over from Rav Soloveitchik, once said it over from his uncle, the Brisker Rav, Zatzal, that at a chasana, I think I mentioned this, at a chasana that the chasana was about to place the ring on the index finger of his kala, and the ring fell. So right away, there was a tremendous hullabaloo that perhaps this is an omen. And then it fell a second time on the rebound. And once again, the hullabaloo was even greater than the first time. And the third time, he was exceptionally careful after he picked up the ring and once again gave it to the kala. And this time, Baruch Hashem, it was chal. So the Brisker Rav was at the chasana. I think he was beside the kedusha. So they asked him, how do you explain these phenomena? So in classical Litvisha fashion, Brisker Rav said, clearly, that was not yet the moment where the Kedushin was ready to be performed. And therefore, that's why there were two omens that preceded the giving of the ring and placing out the index finger of the Kala. And when that happened, that's when the Ribbono Shel Olam decided that that's the moment of Hachra. So just, okay, we can begin. The topic we're going to discuss is Halicha L'chukas Sagoyim, a very broad and diverse range of issues that hopefully will be encompassed in the course of these shiurim. But as always, and I've mentioned this many, many times, and I believe it's 1,000% true. And the one who really said it, and we discussed this a while ago in other shiurim, is the Vilna Gaon, but it's actually found in the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, this Yisod, Chumash, a number of times. The Gaon says it many times. All of Torah Shebaal Peh is founded on Torah Shebichsav. So if one examines Torah Shebichsav very carefully, one will find in it all the Yisodos of Torah Shebaal Peh. It is difficult for us to do that. The Gaon, the last years of his life, this is what is reported in the biography of the Vilna Gaon, that he already had mastered the entire Torah, Kol HaTorah Kula, and so he just learned Torah Shebichsav. Because in every pasuk in Tanakh, he saw in front of him the entire Torah Shebaal Peh. So we don't have that kind of panoramic vision that the Gaon had. However, we can still examine Psukim, and the introductory shiur is going to focus on the Psukim that I found in front of you. I sent out two sets of Maamar Kamos, one last week and several tonight. There are about 21 pages of Maamar Kamos, approximately. So we'll attempt to try to navigate the shoals of this issue, Halicha B'chukas HaGoyim. And we'll begin by examining Psukim in Parshas Acharemos. Kayadua, the issue of Chukos HaAkum is actually found a number of times in Chumash. But certainly, some of the primary psukim are those that are found here in Parshas Acharemos, and those are the psukim I would like to begin with. And there are other psukim as well, but these are the primary psukim that we're going to deal with. The Torah begins in Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Aleph. Vayidaber Hashem l'Moshe l'Emor, Dabriel b'nei Yisrael v'yomartu alehem, ani Hashem elokeichem. Ki ma'asei eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem bo lo sa'asu, uchi ma'asei eretz Kenan asher ani mevi eschem shoma lo sa'asu, uvechu koseihem lo se'lechu. So let's just parse the pasuk in Gimel. Initially, the Torah tells us that one should not do, one should not practice the practices that were observed in Eretz Mitzrayim, Asher Yishavtem Bo, where we actually dwell, These are the parshas that we are reading right now. And as a matter of fact, the end of Vayigash, the parsha we just read this past Shabbos, the Torah says that Klal Yisrael, even though initially Yaakov Avinu, his intention was not to settle in Egypt, but only to dwell there temporarily, Yaakov thought that El Chav Yarenu B'Terem Amos, that let me see Yosef, and then return to Eretz Yisrael, but it was not meant to be. And the destiny of Yaakov Avinu became one of, as the Ramban mentions, a Yerida L'Tzorech Aliyah, a descent, only in order to ultimately ascend, but to ascend, of course, after the descent to Egypt, to Mitzrayim, and then ultimately Maimon HaSinai, and ultimately Eretz Yisrael. So the Pasuk says, K'masi Eretz Mitzrayim Asher Yeshaftim Bo, that Yaakov Avinu indicated, and this is what he told his children, and what he indicated to Yosef, but at the end of the parsha, the Torah says, Vayeshev Yisrael be'eretz Mitzrayim be'eretz Goshen, Vayeoch Azuba, Vayifru, Vayirbu Ma'od. The Torah is rather expansive in terms of what happened, that even though the initial intention was only to dwell there on a temporary kind of basis, but it turned out to be a yeshiva, which was a yeshiva of Keva. So the Torah actually testifies to that over here. K'masi eretz Mitzrayim asher yeshavtim bo. So that yeshiva undoubtedly led to what the Rambam writes in the Mishnah Torah, a very famous Rambam, that a person is probably most influenced by his environment. As we know, peer pressure is a major factor in how people behave and how people conduct themselves and deport themselves. So here, because of the yeshiva on Eretz Mitzrayim, and that's exactly what Yaakov Avinu was frightened about, he was frightened about that it will become a yeshiva of a permanent nature, of it, not a temporary sojourn, namely, Lagur Ba'aretz Banu. We know that the Pasuk in Chayisara tells us, Ger V'toshav Anochi Imachem. We discussed that actually in one of the Thursday night Shiurim. And Rasul Eish used to point out the oxymoron, the contradiction that's embedded in that, in those two terms. On the one hand, Ger is someone, of course, who's there of a temporary nature. Toshav is generally a Toshav Kavua, one who settles. So here the Torah has testified, not just at the end of Vayigash, and not just at the end of Vayichi, and not just the beginning of Shmos, because the beginning of Shmos describes of Bnei Yisrael, Poru, Vayishritzu, and Vayatzmu Mod, Vayir, Poru, Vayishritzu, Vayirvu, Vayatzmu Mod, Mod, Vatimoli Arzaisam. Very similar to the psukim that I found at the end of Vayigash, which indicate essentially that even though initially our intent was to settle there on a temporary basis, on a provisional basis, we ended up remaining there for an extended period of time, and that's what the Torah testifies. And the reason why this is relevant here, because that yeshiva, by definition, caused us almost ipso facto, automatically, to absorb osmotically what happens within our environs, the mores, the culture, the tarbut of Mitzrayim, and we know what Chazal tell us, that at the end, Klal Yisrael were shakua b'mem tesharituma. The lowest level we reached, we descended, continued to descend. Luckily, the Medrash tells us, beginning of Shmos, that Loshinu et Shmom, Es Loshonam, Es Malbushayim. So there were elements, residual elements, that Klal Yisrael maintained their own identity. And that, to a large extent, was that which they were able to preserve. But primarily and preeminently, there was tremendous assimilation in Mitzrayim. The Midrashim speak about it. The Beis Halevi, beginning of Shmos, talks about it by Arichus. And the Torah here testifies to this idea in one word. That yeshiva, that becoming a toshav kavua, was responsible for our absorbing that which, in a sense, was not indigenous to our hashkafa, to our value system, but rather that which was indigenous, embedded in the Egyptian culture. So we have the psukim tell this to us by using one term, but the Torah uses the language lo tasu, do not practice, don't follow the mores of Mitzrayim. The Torah continues, uchemase eretz kenan asher ani mevi eschem shama lo sasu. Here also, not just eretz Mitzrayim, but also even eretz Yisrael, the seven nations that occupied eretz Yisrael also had many, many customs, many mores that were either founded upon idolatry, are founded upon many, many secular ideas that were foreign to us to a large extent. So there also, the Torah warns us here in Perek Yudches of Acharemos. As we all know, this is the Kriyas HaTorah that we read on Yom Kippur. Dafka Mincha Yom Kippur, Rishonim point out in Maseches Megillah that the reason why we read Dafka this, because Klal Yisrael are on Yom Kippur achieved the level of Malachim, Malachi Asharis, where the Ramban writes in Pashas Emor, and we know that sense of Nikios means Nikios not just in terms of our practices, but Nikios in Hashkofa, Nikios in terms of our thinking, our Machshava. We are founded upon ideals of Tara and Kedusha. So both Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan, unfortunately, had many, many practices that were foreign to us. And therefore, the Torah says in both cases, Lo Sasu. And then the Torah ends with the following statement, Uvachukoseim Lo Seilechem. Now, this is a striking term. And the reason why it's striking, because there seems to be a tautology in the pasuk. The Torah began by telling us, Lo Sasu Kimase Eretz Mitzrayim and Kimase Eretz Canaan. And then a moment later, the Torah says, Uvachukoseim Lo Seilechem. Why is that not just articulated a moment ago in the first segment of the pasuk? Why did the Torah feel constrained to seemingly repeat the yesod that it mentioned earlier? It gave two prominent examples, namely Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan, and then it sort of sums it up. Now, one might argue that perhaps the pshat is quite simple, and perhaps one could argue this is based on a Ramban in Chumash, a very famous Ramban. The Ramban is found several times in the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, where the Torah has, at the end of Acharemos, the Torah has a list in this Pasha that we're reading now, a list of all the Arayos. The Arayos are found twice in Chumash. Once they're found in Acharemos, once they're found in Kedoshim. Essentially, the Rishonim point out that in Acharemos we have the list of Arayos. In Kedoshim, we have the punishments for these Arayos that are meted out to people who violate these transgressions. But there also are many, many seemingly repetitive elements found in Acharemos and Kedoshim that require attention. However, what's of interest is that the Ramban has a famous comment at the beginning of Parshas Kedoshim, well-known comment to all of us. What's the juxtaposition between the Arayos and the beginning of Kedoshim? Kedoshim to you, ki kodesh ani Hashem Elokeichem. So Rashi commented, Kaddish at, Rashi comments that Kedoshim to you, Prushim and Arayos. Rashi juxtaposes the two Parshios, namely the Parsha Vacharemos Arayos, and now the Torah tells us that we should not in any way ape or simulate the mores, the decadent kind of lifestyle of the non-Jewish world, namely the Arayos, that they were unfortunately and heavily wallowing in, but rather we should strive for a life of Kedusha, a life of Kedusha too. That's how Rashi sees the juxtaposition of the two Parshas. Comes the Ramban and has a completely different perspective. The Ramban has a Yesod, which is very famous, Kaddish Atzmecha b'mutaloch, that even in areas which are permissible, namely a person is allowed to speak freely. Of course, we're not talking about Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemer, Rechilas, that's Aser, that's outright interdicted, that's forbidden, unquestionably. But even Dibur, which is permissible, so that the Torah tells us, according to the Ramban, Kaddish Atzmecha b'mutaloch, the term Kedusha, the Ramban defines it kiseder, as self-discipline, that one has to contain oneself, self-containment, self-discipline. One has to somehow restrain and only speak that which is necessary. The Rambam writes in Pirush HaMishnayos a number of times, and many Rishonim point out, the Gemara in Yuma and the Rabbi Yonah speaks about this, and the Balei Musa talk a lot about this at great length. Namely, there's an Isaraf say, "Bidibarta bom v'lo bidvarim b'teilim," even to speak idle words that don't involve necessarily any Isar per se, but that's not appropriate. So the Dibur has to be elevated to a high level. Rishonim speaks sometimes in, when they speak about each other, they say, Pe kodosh, ech yoyma dovazeh. How could this holy mouth utter the following? So one has to try to develop a pe kodosh. That's based on the Targum Unkelos, the beginning of Bereshis. The logos, essentially, is that which distinguishes a human being from the other categories that the Ramban defines. It's taken already from philosophers and others. Namely, there are four categories of creation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the Bria. And they are a domain, Someach Chai Medaber. So Medaber, the Rambam has in Moreh Nevuchim, the Muta Kalimun, HaMedabrim, those that have the ability to express their ideas and to articulate them in a very beautiful kind of way, with mellifluity and the like. And that, of course, represents and reflects the human being, the greatness, the godliness of the logos of the human being. So the Ramban there, in the beginning of Kedoshim, articulates this Yesod, namely the Yesod of Kedoshim Tiyu, whether it's in the area of Dibur, on the area of achilo shtia, or in other areas, in private areas. The Gemara says, so in areas which are permissible, so even there, one has to somehow set down guidelines and parameters, and one has to behave in a fashion that will lead to Kedusha. Now, the reason why I'm connecting that to this, you'll see in a moment, because we asked the question over here, and the same question can be asked over there as well. And the Ramban asked the question. Obviously, the Ramban gave several examples. Dibur, Achila, Shtia, Beino, Leveino. The Ramban relates a number of examples. But clearly, it's not possible for the Torah to delineate and to spell out every possible example. That's impossible. And therefore, what does the Torah do? The Torah, in effect, tells us that Abriel called Benas B'nei Yisrael, after the Torah has listed in the Acharemos and Hosin Kedoshim, as I mentioned, a list of all the Arayos, and then the Torah says that we should follow these practices, namely of Kedusha, and not Chas V'Sholom, be misled in the primrose path of Arayos, because V'lo Sechol V'chukas Hagoy, the language of Hakor refers to, similar to Hagola, the idea of Hagola, the way the Shach and others in Yerodea point out, is to be maflit the Isur, that is nivla in the Dofne Akli. We want to somehow spit it out. It has to be extirpated, it has to be eviscerated, it has to be removed. The difference between Hagola and Libun is Libun that we burn, actually, we destroy completely whatever Isur is in the pot. But in the case of Hagola, we simply remove it. It is nivla in the pot, and through Hagola, it's able to be taken out. So that's the idea of the Torah says, Chas V'Shom, Eretz Yisrael should not spew us forth. If we practice the terrible ways of the Umos HaOlam, and the same psukim are found also at the end of Kedoshim, and the Torah speaks about Golos. Golos, which is the most dreaded punishment that Chas V'Shom, Klal Yisrael could endure. Golos is Hester Ponim, and that's a terrible punishment, and it's mentioned first here in Chumash and Achayimus Kedoshim. That's probably why Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal suggested a number of times the Haftorah for Achayimus Kedoshim is Halokim Nei Pushim Atem Li B'nei Yisrael Num Hashem. Halos Yisrael Haleisim Eretz Mitzrayim Pushtiim Mikaftorah Baram Mikir. And then at the end of the Haftorah, it speaks about the dreaded punishment of Golos. That's the connection between the Parsha Yosir, Achayimus, and Kedoshim. Sometimes the Haftorah is even read twice. That's a whole discussion in the Torah, in the Levush, a well-known discussion relating to those parashiyos. But what's relevant to us is that the Ramban is telling you a yesod. There's no way the Torah could define and the Torah could actually delineate and spell out every possible detail of a person's life where Kedusha has to somehow come to the fore. So what did the Torah do? The Torah first lists all the arayos, and obviously the Torah wants us to keep our distance from these arayos, and the Torah wants us to practice a life of Kedusha in every single area, in eating, in drinking, in speech, in our sexual mores, v'chulu v'chulu. And then the Torah, because it cannot go into every detail, so the Torah now presents a general kind of kivun, a general direction, and this general direction we should follow, namely Kedoshim to you. Ramban gives a similar example. He has later on the Pasuk V'asisa Yashav Atov. We know the Torah actually has in it a number of elements of Choshev Mishpat, of how we should interact with our neighbors in the most wholesome kind of way. And it applies not just in the area of Choshev Mishpat, but in other areas as well. And the Torah speaks about specific Isurim. The Torah speaks about specific areas where we have to be careful how we interact with our neighbors. But at the end of the day, there's no way the Torah could possibly delineate and spell out every single scenario. There are so many scenarios, it's impossible to do. So what does the Torah say? V'asisa ha-yashav atov. So to answer this kasha, I would say balabatish, that is exactly the answer to the question that I posed l'chatchila. Namely, the Torah begins by saying, k'maase eretz Mitzrayim asher yeshavtem bo lo yisasu, u'k'maase eretz Kanaan asher ani mevi eschem shama lo yisasu. But there's no way that the Torah could possibly detail all the minutia, all the protim, apirte protim, of the behavior, of the wayward behavior of the nations of the world. Even we look around the world right now, and what we see is absolute mayhem. I'm not talking about corona now. I'm speaking about simply behaviorally, how nations of the world behave, how human beings behave. And there are so many different areas, it's almost impossible to catalog. It's almost impossible to really, in a very specific kind of way, almost as if we throw up our hands in despair and say, what's going to be? So what does the Torah do? It tells us, don't do what they did in Mitzrayim. Don't do what they did in Eretz Canaan. But now I want you to, shall we say, put it in the following terms. There's something called the letter of the law, and there's something called the spirit of the law. So the Torah cannot possibly delineate every letter of the law. It's impossible. But it does so in the context of Arayas. It does so in the context of Shabbos. The Torah doesn't mention much about Shabbos. The Mishnah Chagiga writes that Hilcha Shabbos, Harorim Hatulim Besairo, namely, Mikra Muot V'Halachas Merubas. Very little text, very few psukim, and yet many, many halachas, multifarious, multi-yud halachas. Hilcha Shabbos is wide-ranging and vast beyond belief. What does the Torah do? It gives you, it attempts to spell out some of the halachas of Shabbos, and then the Torah, in effect, primarily is concerned with the spirit, with the Ruach of Shabbos. That's what we have to absorb. That's what we have to somehow try our best to integrate into our lives, integrate into our personalities, integrate into our family, integrate into our children, be mechanech, our talmidim, with the overall spirit of Shabbos, the kedusha of Shabbos, the idea of Shabbos being a Shabbason. The Ramban in Chumash writes at one point in time, and the Ramban reflects this as well in Perek Chav Daled, when the Ramban speaks about Muktzah. The Gemara says that Muktzah is Asur, Agzera Oto Hitzah. That's the reason why the Gemara gives why Muktzah is Asur. However, the Ramban felt the need to somehow expatiate, and he provides a whole series of reasons at the end of Perek Chav Daled to Shabbos that seemingly have no mocha. The Ravid on the spot is Masiga the Ramban. What are you doing? The mocha for Muktzah is Mishum Haitzah, Zera Mishum Haitzah. So clearly the Rambam felt the need to somehow shore up the concept of Muktzah, and he does so in many, many different ways. But at the end of the day, it's based on what the Ramban and Chumash call Shabboson, that one technically could be do all kinds of things on Shabbos. We could start moving furniture in our homes, and it would not be a violation. There was a Dayan in London, a famous Dayan, and all of you are familiar with him. He wrote a book called The Sabbath. I imagine we have one of the Choshev Rabbanim with us, and perhaps you're familiar with the Sabbath by Dayan Grunfeld, Zechatzadik Livracha. He wrote a number of svarim. He wrote actually in English on Shemitah, very beautiful svarim. Also, he wrote probably the first book of its kind. I imagine the English in front of me are more familiar with it than the other Anglo-Saxons. Americans are not really Anglo-Saxons. I'm not sure if they're Anglo or they're Saxons, but whatever the case is, the Anglo-Saxons here and the South Africans undoubtedly have a better understanding of Dayan Grunfeld. He was a phenomenal Dayan, phenomenal Talmid Chacham, phenomenal human being. I actually taught some of his grandchildren in the course of my years in Chinuch. And so Dayan Grunfeld wrote a book called The Sabbath. Fantastic book. A small little kuntris, basically. He defines each malacha, but then he has a, more or less a preamble, a hakdama, and he points this out. He points out that one could do all kinds of things on Shabbos, and one would not be in violation of the letter of the law, but one would be in violation of the spirit of the law. A person takes a needle and carries it from Rishus HaYachad to Rishus HaRabin. You're in violation of Eitzah. Al Yetzah Ishbim Kaimah Be'em HaShvi, or quoted in Tanakh, the love of Eitzah. But it would seem that when one moves furniture in one's home, so there, one is not in violation of anything. The answer is that one has, even though in terms of the letter of the law, one has not violated Shabbos, but one certainly has violated the spirit of the law. So I would like to suggest an answer to this first question that I posed, that is exactly the same result that the Torah is telling us. Namely, similar to V'yasisa Yashar V'atov, the Torah cannot go into every detail of Chesh Mishpat. So what does it do? It provides a number of details, and then it tells you V'yasisa Yashar V'atov. One has to learn Torah and learn it in such a way where one absorbs it asthmatically, and in the course of learning Torah, one becomes invested with the Ruach HaTorah, or as I tell Talmidim, that Halavai should be zeicha to even give you a Shmek of Torah. You should have a Reach of Torah. And if I do that, then I've accomplished, I've succeeded, hopefully, at least minimalistically. And from there, Lech b'kol chacho zeh v'hoshas Yisrael. With that Reach HaTorah, you'll continue to grow, and Yitz Hashem, you'll become Talmidim Chachamim and Gedol Yisrael, Be'ez Hashem Yisbarach. So the point of the Torah is that first we list a number of areas of Chesh Mishpat, which are specific, but we cannot possibly, as I mentioned, list all of them. So then we have a general kivun, a general direction, Vasisa Yashar V'Tov, in a similar fashion. The Ramban again points this out. The Torah lists all the Isuri Arayos, but there's no way I can possibly list all the different types of sexual mores that are not appropriate. So the Torah says, Kedoshim Tiyu, Kikodosh Ani Hashem Elokechem, said the Ramban, Kali Shatzmuchah B'Mutalach, and one who does not do so is a novel B'Shus HaTorah, a scoundrel but he has the permission of the Torah because technically he didn't do anything wrong. So the question that I posed here at the very beginning of this discussion of Chukos HaAkum is of a similar nature. Namely, the Torah began by telling us not to do that which was done in Mitzrayim, not to do that which was done in Eretz Canaan. So then we ask, so what does the Torah say? Uvechukoseim lo seilecho. It would seem to be completely superfluous. It's a tautology. The Torah already mentioned. Kemasi Eretz Mitzrayim asher shaftim bo lo sasu. Uchemasi Eretz Canaan asher ani mevi eslem shama lo sasu. And the answer is because the Torah operates in this kind of a fashion. I'm not saying over, the Ramban does not say this. I'm suggesting that perhaps similar to what the Ramban writes elsewhere in the context of Yosisa, Yashav, Atov, in the context of Doshin Tiyum, the same Yesod can be applied over here as well. Namely, there's no way the Torah could possibly list and itemize all the variances, all the deviancies, and we're undoubtedly in our generation familiar with a lot of deviant behavior in so many areas that is inappropriate from a halachic perspective. And people often will question, will say, why? What's the problem? Why is this an issue? Why is that an issue? I'm not going to get into details or specifics right now. All of us can conjure up for ourselves what I'm referring to. So what does the Torah say? The Torah lists specific areas, namely acharemos, and then the Torah sums it up with the statement, uvechukoseim lo seilecho. Hopefully one will absorb the shmek of Torah, the ruach of Torah, to such an extent where one will know what is considered to be right, what is considered to be wrong. This, the Yesod to me is, I think, a balabatish teretz and the correct teretz discussion. I'm going to offer another answer in a little while, but this is, I believe, a simple answer to this question, which I think is a very fundamental and basic question. This idea, someone asked me once, how do I know there's a concept of reach of Torah? Where did I get such an idea? One of the Gaonim of the previous generation, many years ago, I was zeichet to have a connection with him, and a number of times I brought him maros, and he went ahead on one or two occasions, and he actually sniffed the mara, and I asked him my hi, and right away he told me va'aricho b'yiras Hashem, and said based on the Gemara. It's not the Eish Chiddush, it's found in the Gemara actually, but that someone would, it was Manei Nuan who actually practiced that. There was the Goyin, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, Zechatzal de Bracha. I had a bit of a connection with him. I was involved with a institution, with a women's institution, and his shul was not far, and I used to actually visit him quite often and listen to his shiurim and actually ask him shaylos and halacha. He was a giant in Kol HaTorah Kula, besides the other Kabbalistic elements that were associated with him that I was not aware of. Till unfortunately, till after his Ptira. So I would say that this is the answer. But in terms of Reach HaTorah, where do I get such an idea? It's a Ramban and Chumash. Ramban condemns in the context of Psukim and Parshat Kisisa, undoubtedly all of us remember. In Kisisa, the Torah tells us that Moshe and Yeshua ben Nun descended after Har Sinai, and then they witnessed the following sight in front of them, namely the sight of Klal Yisrael's involvement with the Chet HaEgel. So the Torah tells us, and the Torah is very precise and very specific, that there were two different perspectives. One, the perspective of Yeshua, and one, the perspective of Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayar Yeshua es kol hom bereyo, vayomer al Moshe, kol milchoma b'machaneh. And Moshe Rabbeinu responded to Yeshua's comment, no, that's not correct. It's not a kol milchoma b'machaneh, but rather, ein kol anos gevura, ve'en kol anos chadusha, kol anos anochi yodea. Anochi Shomea. So the Targum there, Rashi quotes the Targum. What's the distinction between the perspective of Yeshua ben Nun and the perspective of Moshe Rabbeinu? Yeshua ben Nun saw Kol Milchama B'machaneh. Moshe Rabbeinu said, incorrect. What I see is Kol Ano, says the Targum, and Rashi quotes it, Chirufin V'Gidufin Klapi Mala. Klal Yisrael were in a frenzy. It was orgiastic behavior, writ large. Vayara Sa'egel Mechelas, the way the Sfarno comments over there. And as a result, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu decided to break the luchos, and the luchos were broken. Okay, the Gemara in Shabbos with the Kal Vachomer, but even putting aside the Kal Vachomer, the luchos were broken simply because it was behavior that was absolutely unconscionable. And the Ramban right away asked the question based on the Medrash: how is it Yeshua saw one thing and Moshe Rabbeinu sees something else? They have the same geographic perspective; they're viewing it from the same distance. And the answer is, that says the Ramban, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Yeshua that you're not yet ready to be a manik. Why? Because a manik Yisrael has to be Lashon HaRamban, Lashon HaMedrash, Makir B'niguni HaKoilis. From the nigid, you're able to sniff and to scent out what's going on. So Yeshua at that time was still a neophyte, was still a novice, and because he was not yet completely and totally mushrash in manhigos, he was still at that point involved in shimush. Yeshua ben Nun Nar lo yomish v'techayel, and by Tais writes in Ksubis as well, that when one is involved in shimush, one cannot even go ahead and take care of a meis mitzvah, because one is still in the mode of shimush. And Yeshua was in the mode of shimush. And in that mode, he had not yet fully and totally absorbed and integrated all the qualities that are needed for to be a manik. And one of the qualities is that you size up what's happening in front of you, you evaluate it, and as a result, Moshe Rabbeinu had that ability, lahakir b'niguni hakolos. Moshe Rabbeinu knew the shtimung. He understood the tones of what was happening here, namely tones of blasphemy, blasphemous behavior, chiruf b'gidufa klapi mala. And Yeshua only saw kol milchama b'machaneh. So this idea of reach ha-Torah, that one has to develop a shmek of Torah, and one has to, in effect, become so enveloped with the, not just knowledge of Torah, but the knowledge of Torah completely and transforms an individual. Where Rashi writes in Masechet Shabbos that when a person is through the Mechol Koicham, Rashi writes in Masechet Shabbos, this I heard from Agoyin Rav Gitzes Zatzal a number of times, namely, one is Torah Mechol Koicham Ladas Seidah, that one was able to ultimately acquire the Seid of Torah. Means he and the Torah become one. He and the Torah somehow emerge and emerge as one unit. They merge together. They fuse together as one identity. And Chazal speak about this any number of times, that to Chochma, what did I say to Chochma? The Pasuk says in Mishlei Achesiyat, you are my sister. Emor Chochma Achesiyat, you are my sister. I have a connection. I have a very emotional, experiential kind of connection, not just an intellectual connection, but an emotional connection. So all this is being said just to explain what I just pointed out in the kasha that I asked. Namely, let's just sum it up. Yes, there are certain practices that have to be abhorred, that are abhorrent, that are repugnant, and don't do them. And again, however, the Torah cannot possibly go into sordid details of every practice that is abhorrent, that's abominable, and then when the Torah sums it up, somehow you should sufficiently absorb the Torah to an extent where you're not going to go ahead and follow the chukos ha'akum. So this is one teretz to the kasha, and now I would like to suggest the second teretz, and the second teretz will lead us into a discussion of chukos ha'akum im yirtzeh Hashem. The Torah goes on. Let's read Pasuk Dalet and Pasuk Kei as well. Es mishpotai ta'asu, v'es chukosai tishmu l'leches b'hem, ani Hashem Elokeichem. Everyone knows the distinction between mishpotim and chukim, Rashi, in Chumash, and the Rishonim spend a fair amount of time discussing the distinction. Rashi on the spot, if you take a look, I underlined it, not that particular Rashi, the previous Rashi, but this Rashi also is something that we are familiar with. Mishpatai Tasu, says Rashi, Elu Dvarim Ha'amurim Batorah B'Mishpat, Shilu La'Nemru Ha'yukidai La'amram. These are rational ideas that are clearly, logically, and fundamentally, their underpinnings are with a lot of reason, with a lot of time. Those are Mishpatim. And then Chukosai, says Rashi, refers to Dvarim Shem Zeras HaMelech. They are things that the Yetzer often will attack us. Why do we observe chukim? And the Umas HaOlam also have issues with it. Rashi gives several examples, namely achila, eating food that's treif, levisha shatnes, taras mechatas. I remember growing up as a youngster, so my father Shalom used to tell me that the reason why we observe the laws of kashrus is that we don't want to get trichinosis. So there are many, many reasons that were bandied about. This is something that's discussed by Agoin HaTzadik, Abshim Shofel, Herzatzal, and many others actually talk about the Sefer HaChinuch and the Ramban in Chumash Kayadua, and in general, Rishayim and Achrayim speak about that the Gemara Yuma, that the Gemara says that one will come to Timtum Halev. I don't know if I told over the story here. I heard from Hagoyin of Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal. My wife and I went to see him in 1983, 2 years before he was Nifta, Rabbi Yankov. And we came to ask him advice. My Rebbe, Lishon Alper Zatzal, arranged a meeting with him. And we came to ask him advice on a certain issue. And in the course of it, I realized that I have the Goyin Hador in front of me. And so, obviously, Baruch Hashem, I have a golden opportunity. And I utilized that opportunity. Not everyone was happy with me. We were there for an extended period of time, B'lashon HaBata. And one of the things that Rabbi Yankov told me, I asked him the following. I taught in the course of years many different types of students. I taught Iranians. When the Shah, when the government of the Shah fell in Iran many, many years ago, so there were many Iranian students who escaped, and they escaped to all different types of drachim, shenon drachim, how they somehow emerged from Iran. Many of them actually were b'chazdei Hashem and b'chazdei shluchim of Hashem is barach. And probably here, this audience, I imagine, Rabbi Weiss Shlita is aware of what happened in El Yisrael of Baltimore, where Rabbi Neuberger zechatzag de bracha. He literally, I can only say that what he did was that not only did he bring them into the yeshiva, he adopted them as his children. And from that group of Iranians who came, emerged massive Talmidei Chacham. I've met a number of them in my lifetime. And he was Isha Chesed Shein Kamo. Anyway, so I taught Iranians who didn't get to know Yisrael, and I taught them in Providence, Rhode Island. Rabbi Shor Shlita, that's a small city in the United States. There are other cities besides New York and Chicago and L.A. I don't know if you're aware of them, but among the cities is Providence. And obviously it was providential that I came there unquestionably. Yibon Shalom directs traffic. And so I arrived there, and there were a number of Iranians I taught. I still have a contact with some of these Iranians who today are, came out, all of them are doctors, some of them in California, some of them in Great Neck, different parts of the United States. So the Iranians I had were incredibly refined. I was very nispal from them, from their behavior. They were delicate. They were sweet. They were just, their character was really sterling. Sterling character. I don't know how to describe it. Virtuoso in every respect. But I also taught other students who came from Russia in the course of my years. And again, I'm not here to issue a general statement about Russian students, but let us say that they were the very antithesis of the Iranians. That is, B'lashon HaMata, again, the understatement of the year. They were out of control. They were impossible. Maybe, I don't know if I have the right to compare them to the Prime Minister of Russia, the present Prime Minister, but they were characters beyond characters. And so I decided I'm going to ask Hagoyin of Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal, how do you explain the distinction between the Iranians and the Russians? So I decided, why not, since I had an open forum in his home in Muncie, and even though he was a Zokin Muflog, but he was sharp like anything, completely shofi bedato, and so he spoke in Yiddish, and I spoke to him in English. And that was the nature of the conversation. And so I asked him this question, and Rabbi Yankov answered me the following, and I was, Ariyom Azeh, it resonates in my mind and in my heart. He asked me if I know something about Jewish history. Have I studied Jewish history? I didn't know whether I should say yes or no. Clearly, I didn't have the knowledge of Jewish history that he had. Yeah, I read a few books here and there. I was a very young man when I came to ask him this question, many, many decades ago, in 1983. So I didn't say anything. I always felt Shev Al Tasa Odif, as the Gemara says. And so then he said, okay, would you like to hear a bit of a lecture on Jewish history? I didn't say a word. And I didn't mind hearing, he could have lectured for 50 hours. I would have stayed there. I would have been besimcha. And so he then presented to me more or less a précis of Russian history and the Jewish people in Russia in the last 100 years. From the time of 1917, the Russian Revolution, and he went through different segments of Russian Jewry, including, obviously, the period of time when the communists took over. We're talking about Stalin and company. He called it Stalin the Chavraya, and his conspiracy and his group of, associates, if you want to be polite. So we have Stalin and his associates who essentially took over. And of course, what they tended to do was completely and totally eviscerate Yiddishkeit, and they succeeded in doing it, unfortunately and tragically. And Jews had to go underground, and the situation was literally so dark and so bleak and so gloomy as to be almost impossible to be a frum Jew at that point in Russia. And that went on for decades till the dissidents appeared, until Anatoly Sharansky and Bechulu Bechulu. We are familiar with the history of Russian Jewry. So as a result, what happened? Everything went. No mikvos, no taras hamishpacha, no kashrus, no Shabbos. They knew exactly the weak areas. They knew exactly our Achilles heel, and that's what they attacked. That's what they went after. And they were tragically very, very successful. And many Jews, of course, assimilated, and many Jews acculturated and literally became goyim to the point where they intermarried. And it was a situation that was very, very unfortunate and very tragic. So Rabbi Yaakov said to me, you look at Rishonim and the Gemara in Yuma, and then he proceeded to cite all the Rishonim on the spot who discussed the connection between eating non-kosher food and Timtum Alev. Essentially, he quoted the Rambam on the Buchim, he quoted the Rambam in Chumash, he quoted so many Rishonim to me, I was trying to, on my notepad, to write it down as quickly as I could, but he was much quicker than I was able to write down all the material. And that connection, he said, led to what I just described. Russian students who came to the United States, but unfortunately were out of control because of Timtum Alev. The Iranians, he said to me, on the other hand, even when the Shah, when his government fell, but the Iranian Jews maintained their fealty to Kashrus, to Shabbos, to Mikvah, to Taras HaMishpacha. As a result, they didn't suffer from this lack of Timtum Alev. That's what Rabbi Yaakov told me. And therefore, he said, that's why you had refined young men who came to you, even though they were not necessarily knowledgeable in Judaism, but they had a totally different perspective on the matter. I was so astounded by that teretz. I'll never forget, in 1983. So I called my Rebbe, Hagoyim Nanisim Albert Zatzal, and told him what I said. He told me that Svasai Nishak, or the Rosh Hashiva said, he's the one who arranged the meeting, he said, I must come miyad. And the moment I'm in the New York area, I should come to see the Rosh Hashiva, Hagoyim Namesha Feinstein, and tell him what Rabbi Yankov said. Okay, so the next time I was in that area, I came to visit that Hagoyim Nanisim Albert. He took me to his Rebbe, Hagoyim Namesha Feinstein, the Gol Ador, and I told this over to Hagoyim Namesha Feinstein. And Ramesha Feinstein was so taken aback. Right away, he said what Rav Nissim Albert said, Sfasayim Yishok. He says, what you just heard, of course, he said, you heard a Yesod from Chakimo de Yudoi. That's how we call Rav Yankov, Chakimo de Yudoi. He's the wisest man in Klal Yisrael. And this is a fundamental, very beautiful story that I heard. And this relates to this Rashi. That's how we began, actually, because Rashi distinguishes here between Chukim and Mishpatim. So basically, Chukim are actions that appear to us to be arbitrary. In Hebrew, you call them shrirutiyim. You don't really understand the toelas. What's the point of observing all these chukim? And Rashi gives examples. Achilas chazer, levisha shadnes, taras mechatos. We don't understand the nature of these chukim. Hashekim mishpatim already clearly have a fundamental basis. So let's just simply answer the question, and with that, we'll conclude this segment of the Shurim, but all this is by way of introduction to the topic, which is, as I indicated at the outset, that if one has an understanding of the psukim, then one will be able to then navigate all the Maamar Kamos and Amitz Hashem we hope to explore in the next short while. Namely, why does the Torah repeat after it tells us not to do what they do in Mitzrayim, not to do what they do in Eretz Canaan? Then it says, so the answer, of course, is, as always, Tzvei Dinim. There's always a dialectic, and the dialectical pull is inherent here in the psukim. On the one hand, the Torah tells us that we should not adopt the mores of Egypt, the mores of Canaan. Those mores are absolutely, as I indicated, somehow repugnant, abominable. And the Torah, Dafka, Rashi says here, speaks about Mitzrayim and Canaan, because, says Rashi, Maseim shel Mitzrayim shel Canaanim mekukolim mikol umos. They're worse than all the other nations put together. We're talking about actions that are masim mitu abim, masim sulim. Some of them the Torah mentions in the hemshech of this parak, when the Torah lists and delineates the Isuri Arayas. On the other hand, there's a second aspect that the Torah wants us to be cognizant of, and that is embedded in the last three words of the pasuk. Ubechukoseim lo seleichel. That is to say, we're no longer talking about actions that are abominable. We're no longer talking about actions that are absolutely to be disdained, to be scorned, to be completely and totally abandoned. But rather, we're talking about all kinds of things that they do, the Umos Olam, you might call them stam, that inherently are not negative, are not things that, shall we say, have an element of abomination to them. Just as, for example, there's no offhand, we speak about Kalayim. Kalayim is something which is neutral. We not understand what exactly Kalayim is all about, why the Torah asked it, although the Ramban has an explanation for that as well, because everything was created. The Torah says that the Rebbe Shem created everything, each min by itself. So why did Torah asa these ma'isim? And the answer is the Torah did not want us in any way to simulate the mores of the non-Jewish world, to adopt their culture, to adopt their philosophy, to adopt their value system. Even if the actions in and of themselves are not inherently abominable, but it's inappropriate that Klal Yisrael should follow the Umos Olam. And that's why it's meduyak lahafli the psukim. The first set of halachas that are abominable, that are absolutely revolting, the Torah says, lo sasu, don't do what they did in Mitzrayim. Don't do what they did in Canaan. But what does the Torah say regarding this second aspect? Namely, b'chukosem lo selechu. The Torah is telling you the issue is not the action themselves. The issue is that I'm following the mores of the non-Jewish world. I'm attempting to be like them. I want to model myself after them. Of course, we're talking about sometimes positive things. They do positive things. Of course, we should follow the positive things that they do. But if we're talking about a maises stami, namely, it has no either toelas or anything negative, but they do it. So that is also going to be something that the Torah wants us to keep away from, to maintain our distance, and somehow not to even connect to those kinds of actions. And that's going to be the yisod of B'chukosem Lo Selecho that we're going to discuss in Mitzvah Hashem from a halachic standpoint. But I simply wanted to, by this introduction, by this preamble, to show you in the psukim that there are two different approaches to answering this question. I believe the first approach I suggested based on the Ramban elsewhere in Basisa Yashav Atov and Kedoshim Tiyu is exactly the answer to this kasha as well. Chaval that the Ramban didn't say it. But I believe this is the correct shot. And secondly, and this is already the lead-in to the issue I'm going to discuss, that here the Torah actually is trying to articulate that the Chukosem Lo Selecho, or in general, the issue of Chukos HaAkum has two elements to it. It is bifurcated. On the one hand, there are things that are absolutely prohibited, interdicted completely in an absolute kind of fashion, that are abominable, that are revolting, that are disdainful. And then there are other areas that seemingly are more of an innocent nature, and yet the Torah wants us not to model ourselves after the Goyim, after the Umos Olam, and that's why the Torah uses two different verbs, in one case, Asiyah, and in one case, the Loshon of Alicha, Uvuchu Goseim Lo Selecho.